Okay, briefly to wrap up my thoughts on O.J. Simpson, there was a big mention by the defense during the criminal trial of blood being planted that some of the blood evidence had this preservative EDTA in it. And EDTA happens to be in fairly large quantities in blood vials, like when you take someone's blood and put it in a vial. Well, it turns out that EDTA is also in a ton of shit. It's all over the place. Food, fragrances, fabrics, drinks. The other day at work, I literally was grabbing some nasal spray for someone at work, and I glanced at the ingredients, and guess what? It had EDTA in it. But here's the kicker. The amount of EDTA in some of the blood evidence at the OJ crime scene and at his house had a small amount of EDTA, like nowhere near the amount that would be present if you had, as the defense claim, took OJ's blood that they collected and planted blood from that vial. In the civil trial, one of the expert witnesses actually had his own blood analyzed, and it had EDTA in it. It's kind of like plastics these days. EDTA is just in a ton of stuff. So likely, any EDTA found in blood samples was from the fabric it was found on, or carpet, or whatever. But here's the rub, and here's where the whole defense theory falls completely apart. There was OJ's blood at the scene, and specifically on the bloody gloves, that had no EDTA on it at all. So there's zero chance that that blood on the gloves was from a vial or that it was planted. That blood could only have come from, say, a cut or an injury directly from O.J. Simpson, like maybe those cuts on his left finger, perhaps, which I think were likely fingernail injuries from one or both of the murder victims trying to fight back. The defense claims there was some blood missing from the vial that they took of OJ's blood. Turns out that was bullshit. The envelope that one of the detectives had in his car with OJ's blood when the detective drove to OJ's house was still sealed and unopened when given to the criminologist. And again, the blood on the gloves had no trace of EDTA. And of course, our villain, the damn racist scumbag, Mark Furman, never even had access to the blood. So it wasn't him planting it. The lawyer, Robert Kardashian, who was friends with OJ, later had some regrets and doubts about OJ, specifically because of the blood evidence, and he later testified in the civil trial where OJ was found guilty. Well, Bobby baby, you should have backed out of supporting Simpson in the first place. You shouldn't have been on his team during the criminal trial, so it's way too late in the game to change teams, to use a sports metaphor. So Robert Kardashian died with a guilty conscience, and he was somewhat shunned in his community after the trials, and I say good for that. It's like, show some fucking integrity in life. Don't give people a reason to despise you. There's always a way to do the right thing. Yes, maybe you'll lose a friend, a celebrity friend, or lose some money, or lose the chance to be famous, but having your own self-respect is way more important than any of that other shit in the end. When I die in like 7 years... Just kidding. I want people to say, you know, I don't know, I was a solid guy, funny, kind of self-absorbed for sure, but genuine and a good friend. But who knows, maybe I will become an asshole at some point. Hopefully not. Let me know if I do. And briefly, we spoke previously about plastic being in everything these days. Well, now they've started literally seeing plastic, or more specifically nanoplastics in people's brains in autopsies. Sometimes like a spoon's worth of plastics. And plastic in the brain isn't good. It can interfere with neural connections and probably fuck with your memory and mood and intelligence, which probably explains the average intelligence of some of the American public these days. Shit, probably half of their brain is plastic. And yes, neuroplasticity is a good thing, which is the ability for the brain to adapt and change its structure. Due to stimuli or learning, our brains continue to make connections until we die, but neuroplasticity has nothing to do with actual plastic. For the last 15 years, I've been trying to avoid plastics. I never heat things in plastic. I drink out of glass water bottles. So do your best to avoid plastics if you can. Just because the majority of the world may be becoming stupid, it doesn't mean we have to be. And they also found plastic in other parts of the human body, including, yes, my friends, the penis. I mean, maybe having plastic in your penis could be a good thing. I mean, I guess it could, like, stretch and stuff, maybe make it longer. And man, I used to love the goofy-ass, silly superhero comic Plastic Man, who was once a criminal who got doused in chemicals, and then he got the ability to stretch his body into any shape he wanted. He decided to become a crime fighter instead of a criminal. He cracks a lot of jokes. It's pretty stupid and funny. There was also an animated TV show, Plastic Man, from 1979. It was only one season, but I was super young at the time, and I just ate it up. All right, well, let's get to it.
You are my density. You are my density.
Okay, so I keep waiting until the last damn minute to write these episodes. I'm actually at my mom's right now. She's watching the Super Bowl in the other room. I stopped watching football when Bart Starr retired. Just kidding, but yeah, I am recording this at my mom's house just in case it sounds any different, or if this episode totally sucks. Well, let's not blame my mom, let's just blame the house. Okay, so I was going to have my final interview via Zoom earlier this week with this job in Los Angeles. The interview was at like 1 p.m., I got up pretty early, I went to the gym, and then after the gym, I was like, damn, man, I'm kind of nervous. I mean, there surprisingly aren't a lot of really good psychiatric nurse jobs in Los Angeles, which is kind of ironic because almost everyone that lives in Los Angeles is nuts, in the best way, of course. So driving home, I was like, okay, this is my big shot. I have to do pretty good on this interview. The heat is on. And so I was like, oh my God, am I really doing this? And I played the song Lose Yourself by Eminem. It felt kind of corny doing it, but honestly, it kind of got me in a better mood. Like, all right, let's do this. As he says in the intro, look, if you had one shot or one opportunity to seize everything you ever wanted in one moment, would you capture it or just let it slip? And speaking of not throwing away my shot, we did some karaoke the other night at my work, and some girl picked that song, My Shot, from the kind of annoying Lin-Manuel Miranda from his blockbuster play Hamilton. I was like, that's a very ambitious song choice. And so she started, and it's not the easiest song to sing, and it was an absolute mess. Out of tune, kind of like the wrong timing. And there are certain songs that if you can't keep the rhythm, it becomes just an epic clusterfuck. Plus, the song is long as hell. Whenever you do karaoke, the appropriate thing to do is never pick a really long song. First of all, if you're good or bad, no one wants to hear you for that long. And actually, when someone does karaoke and it's like really good, it's almost worse than a bad rendition. It's like, okay, you obviously sing really well, you fucking show off. Karaoke is meant to be imperfect and goofy and funny. It's not like you're a finalist on American Idol or something. I've actually done karaoke in bars where I pick a song, I sing enough of it, and then I realize, God, this song is way too long, and I'll just tell the DJ, okay, man, that's cool, let's move on to the next person, I'm done. Inevitably, that next person will fucking sing some long song like Guns N' Roses' November Rain or something. Okay, but back to Eminem. So I was listening to the song on my way home from the gym, and I turned a corner, and I'm not kidding you. There was like this huge, beautiful, bright rainbow like directly in front of me. And I was like, okay, if that's not a sign that things are going to work out, then I give up. As the troubled and tragic Judy Garland sang as Dorothy in the song Over the Rainbow from the movie The Wizard of Oz from 1939. And sorry, I only have my electric guitar here at my mom's and no amp, so this may sound like shit, but here goes.
Somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly. Birds fly over the rainbow. Why then, oh, why can't I?
And speaking of The Wizard of Oz, there's just a weird fucking movie from 1981 called Under the Rainbow. It's like a wacky comedy about Nazis and feds and little people all gathering in a hotel during the filming of The Wizard of Oz. It's got the unlikable Chevy Chase, it's got Carrie Fisher, and yes, it's got fucking Billy Barty. One of those just bizarro, you have to see it to believe it movies. And lastly, supposedly Judy Garland was quite nasty and mean to the little people in The Wizard of Oz. I mean, she was a goddamn mess. You want to see what a life of drugs, alcohol, and mental illness can do to a person? Take a look at her later pictures. She died at age 47, and she looked at least 65. And 1939 was a hell of a year for movies. Not only The Wizard of Oz, but get this, Gone with the Wind, Stagecoach, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, Ninotchka, The Rules of the Game, I mean, forget about it. And speaking of Scarlett O'Hara, the character from Gone with the Wind, I was always impressed by the witty lyric in the song The Lady is a Tramp, originally from the 1937 Rodgers and Hart musical, famously later re-recorded by Frank Sinatra. But I love the Buddy Greco version from 1960, which also has the lyrics slightly tweaked to include some updated references, in which he says, "She flew to London and left me behind. I missed the crowning, but I didn't mind. She won't play Scarlet in Gone with the Wind. It's got a rhyme. That's why the lady is a tramp now." Please listen to the Buddy Greco version. It's completely swinging, absolutely cool, jazzy, and fun. Oh yeah, another edition of Assholes at the Grocery Store. I hate when someone in front of you is like, "Oh, darn, I forgot something. Let me run and get it." And it's like, you forgot something. You know what I didn't forget? That you're a fucking idiot. Unless the item you forgot is like within 10 feet of the cash register, like a pack of gum or candy bar, then sorry, you blew it. We other people didn't all get in line to have to wait for you to go walk to the other section of the store to go get your hemorrhoid cream or something. It's like, you blew it, okay? Pay for your shit. And if you need the other stuff bad enough, then pay for this crap, turn your ass around, and go get your other stuff and get back in line. Here's a couple others. When someone is buying like 800 items, someone is bagging their stuff, and then like the very end when the cashier says the total, then they pull out their wallet or whatever and they start looking for their credit card. And of course they're like, "Oh, okay, not this one. Where did I put that card?" It's like, well, maybe the card is in your ass, you dumb shit. You had 15 minutes while they were bagging your stuff. Get your credit card ready. I mean, are you that clueless? And I was behind this old lady. She asked for cigarettes, and then she starts slowly pulling out her money. It's all fucking ones. And she's like, "Okay, it's $13.60. Okay, here's one, two, three, four, wait. One, two." And I'm like standing behind her, radiating hatred. I'm just stewing. It's like, lady, you're 70 years old. Unless you just started smoking today, you know it's going to be at least 10 bucks. So how about you count out your 10 bucks beforehand? It's like, people, just pay attention, look around, respect other people's time, and generally don't be a jackass. Okay, a few more bits of dialogue or just things I came up with. So yes, I'm using Jack Nicholson, of course, and he's having a whiskey talking to a younger man at a bar. And Jack says, "You know, the thing about being an alcoholic is you always find a reason to drink. Things are going well, have a drink. Things are going badly, have a drink. You're in love, have a drink. You're heartbroken and lonely, have a drink. Pretty soon, you run out of reasons not to drink." And then there's a brief pause. Bartender, can I have another and make it a double, thanks. Okay, this one is maybe more of a New Yorker cartoon type thing. I'm sure a variation on this has been done, but whatever. There's a crossing guard with a stop sign. A cowboy is walking a deer down the street. And the crossing guard says, "Sir, the buck stops here." And this last one is kind of ridiculous, but it makes me laugh, so fuck it. Let's mix this one up. Maybe picture a fairly well-dressed Jeff Bridges coming up to a snooty, arrogant older woman, and he says, "Excuse me, miss, do you know the nearest place around here where I can take a shit?" And hey, if you're ever in the mood for an entertaining but stupid as hell movie with absolutely terrible special effects, then watch The Philadelphia Experiment from 1984, in which some kind of top-secret Navy experiment sends two sailors from like 1940s to the year 1984. There's not much to the story, really, but it's completely 1980s. It stars Michael Paré, a great-looking dude for sure, not the best actor. He's kind of more like soap opera material. And it's got the Brian De Palma staple, Nancy Allen, in it. It's a corny-ass movie, but it's also the type of movie that is just so fun to watch if you're in the right mood. Michael Paré, along with Tom Berenger, starred in the kind of odd little movie from 1983 called Eddie and the Cruisers, a kind of musical-slash-mystery where Eddie, played by Michael Paré, is a big rock star who just kind of goes missing. Ellen Barkin plays a journalist who 20 years after his disappearance tries to figure out what the hell happened. I haven't seen it in forever. I should check it out again. I saw it when I was really young. I don't think I totally got the movie. I do just remember being like, that was kind of a weird and interesting, kind of different movie. Eddie and the Cruisers was directed by Martin Davidson, who also did the completely stupid but just likable as hell Hero at Large from 1980, where a small-time actor played by John Ritter starts roaming around the city in a superhero costume, which also has the always appealing Ann Archer. It's like a made-for-TV movie, but it's got a great heart, and I was always have a sweet spot for John Ritter. I watched a pretty damn good new movie at my mom's called The Order from 2024 with a kind of haggard-looking Jude Law as a flawed FBI agent looking into some white supremacists in the Pacific Northwest. It's based on a true story, and Nicholas Hoult plays the leader of a more radical spinoff group of the National Socialist Aryan Nations, who had a notorious 20-acre compound in Hayden Lake, Idaho. The leader at the time of this Aryan Nations, Richard Butler, who's now dead, thankfully, he preached the gospel of the Turner Diaries, an inane and idiotic novel by this stupid-ass William Luther Pierce about the stages of a white supremacy insurrection, which helped inspire the vile Timothy McVeigh's bombing of the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City in 1995, which killed 167 people, including 19 children. Timothy McVeigh was executed by lethal injection in 2001, unrepentant until the end. I would have preferred him rot in prison, but so be it. Anyway, the movie The Order depicts this FBI agent trying to take down this radical offshoot called The Order. This offshoot was slowly, steadily robbing banks, doing some small-scale bombings, amassing cash along the way to prepare for an insurrection. Along the way, members of the Order assassinated a progressive Jewish talk radio show host named Alan Berg, played by the comedian and podcast host Mark Maron in the movie The Order. Oliver Stone's pretty great 1988 movie, the previously mentioned talk radio, starred Eric Bogosian as a controversial talk show host based on Eric Bogosian's play, which was loosely based on some aspects of Alan Berg's life. Anyway, The Order is a solid film. Jude Law is world-weary, he smokes, he's boozy, he takes pills, he's tormented, he gets bloody noses for some apparent reason. He's just my type of guy. It's kind of slow-paced, procedural, kind of has a 70s vibe. It's shot well, it's pretty fucking good. Nicholas Hoult is kind of a little bit of a dud in it, but I guess that's probably just the way he was directed. I found his character to be kind of a cipher, kind of a blank, not really an inspiring character. But if you're looking for something pretty gripping, though a bit slow, check out The Order. And the last 15 minutes of it are pretty compelling, and it's got a great kind of understated final shot. And if you do watch the movie, that final shot, that's kind of a pun. Okay, before we close, I did watch a bit of the Super Bowl. It was kind of a blowout. But I did watch some of Kendrick Lamar's halftime performance. And man, I grew up on rap. I love it. I grew up in the 1980s listening to Eric B. and Rakim, De La Soul, N.W.A., EPMD, Public Enemy. And yes, I know Kendrick Lamar is well-respected, a Pulitzer Prize winner even, but I just don't find his songs enjoyable. I mean, they're clever lyrics, very well-written, but his songs feel like more of a lesson or a diatribe than music. The songs aren't really catchy to me, and while verbally extremely impressive, as a whole, the songs just bring me little enjoyment, but I'm a dinosaur, I suppose. But I can tell you one thing, I do know what I like. Critics be damned. I mean, I know I'm no longer influenced by what is deemed to be great or deemed to be lousy. I judge things on my own. Yes, in my youth, I may have been influenced by others' opinions like, oh, I'm supposed to like this song or this music or this other thing is uncool or, you know, people say it's terrible. You can't like that. Now my opinions and likes or dislikes are completely rock solid, solely based on my own reasoning. which is kind of freeing, to be honest. I mean, who cares what's labeled cool or what's labeled good or bad? Just fucking go with what you like. Who gives a shit about what other people say? Okay, let's end this on a brief little interlude I had recently at the psych hospital. Like I've said, even in the darkest times, I try to remain hopeful, or at least lie to myself that I'm being hopeful. Things will get better. It's like dream big, fuck it. And I was over in the involuntary unit, just kind of passing through, and some guy, maybe in his late 30s, clearly he was a bit psychotic, he stopped me and he asked me, "Excuse me, how hard is it like to become a nursing assistant? Like, how much school?" And I was like, "Well, man, it's like not a ton of school. I mean, you know, it's totally possible." He also asked about like operating room nurses or like what's a radiology nurse. And I was like, "Well, that's like quite a bit more school." But I tried to encourage him. I said, "You know, hey, when you get out of the hospital, look into one of the nursing assistant programs." I mean, like I said, when he was asking me, the guy was clearly not doing great. But what do I know? Maybe when his medication is sorted out, he can transform his life. And while you don't want to straight up lie to someone, there's no reason not to give a person hope that there's something better out there for them. Even when someone is talking about something irrational or unlikely, I can just say, "Man, I hope so. I mean, go for it." I try to be a positive force to others, and even though I'm upbeat and try to be funny, and I may seem like I'm doing great, I still go home alone, I still drink a little too much, I still struggle, and man, I still get low. But I always try to think, dude, this is gonna work out. Even though I struggle, I figure, don't add to other people's struggles, just try to lift them up. I may occasionally be negative to myself, and I may be hard on myself, but to others, especially at my work, I try to make them hopeful. I mean, what's the point otherwise?